the verse, I'm just going to cover one verse this evening and then talk about what I want to talk about. Because the purport of Srila Prabhupada is very, very relevant. And so that's what I'm going to speak about. Text number 10 from chapter 11 of Canto 1. Ta-da!
159.
Even the lights are on ecstasy, didn't arrive. Flashing. You need sirens and bugles and trumpets. Or pretend like you're not doing something right in the middle of the phone, which is
yeah, we'll
on the class like you're not even.
Pay no attention to that strange man with the microphone stand.
So, the 11th chapter is Krishna's entering Dwaraka. And this verse is he's actually entering. The other verses are Krishna's approaching Dwaraka and the residents running to greet him and offering wonderful prayers. And this evening's verse is they've greeted him. He's there, and he's entering now the city itself, Dwaraka Puri. So, O Master, the residents of that's what you get.
Thank you to Garland for coming away, Mark.
And your garland, your glasses, at least.
Thank you.
O Master, they're addressing Krishna. If you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all of our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwaraka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. I'll read Prabhupada's purport because it's very beautiful and short. Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful. We heard about Krishna's attraction before. We'll read about it again, going back some verses. I'll read it now. I'll read it now and I'll read it again. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada's been speaking about what it's like to be situated in devotional service. And he describes the selflessness of devotional service, where there's no demand on the part of the devotee. There's no demand on the part of the Lord. Although apparently we see demands on the part of the devotee and the part of the Lord. From the Lord's side, he demands, surrender unto me. And then, I'll give you protection from all of your sinful reactions. Looks like a demand. And from the devotee's side, Prabhupada describes with filial affection, this filial affection means the affection of a child to a son, or a child to the parent. With filial affection, the child may make demands. And from Krishna as the Supreme Father, he doesn't see it as demands any more than a loving parent when a child asks for something normal. They're happy to supply. It's not, why are you demanding this? Why are you asking for something to eat? Why are you asking for a jacket because it's cold? What kind of selfish child are you? Not like that. The filial demands are just part of the loving relationship. And Krishna's saying, surrender unto me, it's not because Prabhupada explains it very clearly. He doesn't need something. He's Atmaram. He's complete in himself. He's satisfied in himself. Everything that exists comes from him. He's not lacking in something. So why is he saying, surrender unto me? Out of love. Because that's in the best interest of the living entity. It's in the best interest of the living entity. And he doesn't need to look after our interest. He does out of love, and so he says, surrender unto me. And when you surrender unto me, then you'll be situated in your position of real happiness. So it's, please take your real happiness. But to qualify your real happiness, your hands are filled with something that prevents you from taking that real happiness. So that's something, that other something, drop it. So you can take the real happiness, real constitutional happiness. So there's no demand from either party's part. And that's what it's like to be situated in devotional service. At least cultivating that without envying Krishna's position, like saying, well, why come Krishna's demanding surrender to him? Why doesn't he surrender to me? Or we could take turns. Equal rights. Sometimes Krishna's in charge and sometimes I'm in charge. It's only fair. We learned that in school. Democracy, right? I've had my inalienable rights. So, then, I've been emphasizing this in a number of classes, but here we go again, because it's a theme that Prabhupada is presenting. Those who are engaged in the realm of devotional service to the Lord can rise to the position of unalloyed devotional service by his transcendental attraction. Krishna is attracting the hearts of even the conditioned soul, even the practicing devotee, even the firmly practicing devotee. He's even more attracting the heart. And it's because of his attractiveness that we become purified. We become freed from our attraction to mundane things, like our discussion this morning. Srimad Bhagavatam, by design, Vyasadeva has designed the Bhagavatam in such a way to attract us to Krishna. what's that magnetic attraction? It's Krishna. It's Krishna's attractiveness. So the beginning of this purport is Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by him, one cannot tolerate separation from him. There was a morning walk conversation in Nairobi where one devotee was asking Prabhupada, how do we know when we're chanting good rounds, we're chanting the holy name properly? And Prabhupada's answer was, you must. And you know, Brahmananda intervened and said, Prabhupada, he knows he must, but he wants to know besides chanting the prescribed 16 rounds, how does one know that one is chanting in a quality way? Prabhupada said it again, you must. Just 16,000 rounds. It has quality. There's direct experience with Krishna. The direct experience with Krishna is so ecstatic, one doesn't want to stop chanting and think of anything but chanting. Thinking of Krishna is drawn from Krishna. That's quality. One doesn't have to be told. Now that's quality. Like the verse from the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, which compares the process of hearing about Krishna to the process of eating. As the process of eating nourishes the body, the process of hearing nourishes the soul's attraction for Krishna. So the example is given. There's three things that happen when somebody is hungry. Supposing you've been fasting, Janmashtami or something, you've been fasting all day. So, one pushy, or first is one feels satisfied, then one feels nourished, and one feels sick. How do you handle this? So it's fasting a long time. So the strength comes back to the home. The hunger subsides. Satisfied to the point where somebody, they say, can you take some water, drink some more of that? You don't have to have somebody tell you, can you please tell me when I've had enough? You know when you've had enough. You can experience it directly. Say, okay. Oh, please take a little more of this or that. Similarly, the soul, in the absence of Krishna, in separation from Krishna, by the process of hearing, three things happen. There's the wish to serve Krishna. With that desire to serve Krishna is some feelings. Paraisha anubhav. Feelings toward the Supreme Controller. And viraktir anyatra chak. Virakti, a detachment from other things. By the process of hearing. The desire to serve Krishna. We've all experienced it. In differing degrees, but we've all experienced it. Where does what gives rise to devotional service? It's hearing about Krishna. We want to serve him. We have some feelings for him. Detachment, progressively detachment from other things. So Prabhupada writes, why is this so? Because, very nice purport, we are all eternally related with him as the sun rays are eternally related with the sun disk. The sun rays are molecular parts of the solar radiation. Thus, the sun rays and the sun cannot be separated. Have you ever seen any sun rays zapping around somewhere without coming from the sun? Like, you know, break one off and put it in your pocket and go down the street with it. And show somebody, hey, let me show you, here's a sun ray.
No. No.
Wherever you see sun rays, you know there's the sun. Wherever you know the sun is there, sun rays will be there. So it Prabhupada develops that logic. The rays of the sun are inseparable from the sun. Similarly, living entities are like molecular parts of the Supreme. Not exactly, but like that, Krishna himself says, 15th chapter, living entities, my eternal fragmental parts and parcels. Mamevamsa jivaloke jiva bhuta sanatana. Thus the sun rays and the sun cannot be separated. The separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial. And as soon as the cloud is cleared, sun rays again display their natural effulgence in the presence of the sun. Similarly, the living entities, who are molecular parts of the Supreme Spirit, are separated from the Lord by the artificial covering of Maya, illusory energy. This illusory energy of the curtain of Maya has to be removed. And when it is done so, the living entity can see the Lord face to face. He's repeated this. This is the third time in this section of purports. Face to face, seeing the Lord face to face. That's the mature stage of bhakti. And all his miseries are at once removed. Every one of us wants to remove the miseries of life. That's true. But we do not how to do it. That's also true. The solution is given here. That's also true. And it rests upon us to assimilate it or not. And that's also true. And that's the end of the purport. So he's given us some little map to the treasure house of love of God. And it's not like, you know, a pirate's treasure map. It's like right in the book. Anybody can buy a copy and get the treasure. It's up to us whether we do or not. The process, the mitigating process, is hearing of Krishna, hearing about Krishna. Just as the residents of Dwarka are. It's like in the earlier, in the seventh chapter. No, excuse me. It's later in this canto. When Krishna left Hastinapur to go to Dwarka, it doesn't say it in chapter 10 or chapter 11, but Arjuna went with Krishna. Yudhisthira had, we heard, he had the position of respect for the Pandavas for the Yadu dynasty. Because there are two different dynasties, Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty. They're showing respect to the Yadu dynasty. He's the emperor. He's sending, you know, the one of the royal family back with Krishna to Dwarka. But there was a second reason. Second reason was they wanted Arjuna to make a report. What's Krishna's plan? Because they feared, this is it. Krishna came for three reasons, so three reasons are fulfilled. They had the anticipation, they didn't want to say it, because it would just be too awful even to hear it. But they were all anticipating Krishna is going to leave. So what's Krishna's plan? What's next? So later on in this canto, when Arjuna didn't return, Yudhisthira began to see all these inauspicious signs. He knew what they meant. He recites what the inauspicious omens are. He knew that Krishna had gone. And when Arjuna finally, after months, came back, Yudhisthira asked all around the question, the real question, did Krishna leave? He asked, how are the members of the Yadu dynasty, how are they faring, how is this one, how is that one, what's going on? And Arjuna can't speak. He's smashed. He finally pulls himself together enough to speak. And when he speaks, he just starts sobbing. And he finally gets around to saying, Krishna's gone. Krishna left. He didn't not just left Hastinapur. He left this world. And he starts remembering. He's not seeing Krishna, but he's remembering Krishna. And in remembering Krishna, he describes the ways in which Krishna very intimately associated with the Pandavas. And then he remembers Krishna's instructions to him in Bhagavad Gita. And he speaks those instructions. And as he's speaking Krishna's instructions to him from Bhagavad Gita, he's feeling enlivened. You know, the tushti, pushti. He's feeling strength. He's feeling satisfied. He's feeling detachment from that mood of despondency. He's feeling enlivened. And then he realizes that Krishna, in one form he left, but in another form he remained. He gave him that experience so that he could have his association. Which means we can still have his association, although we haven't seen Krishna. Just like many of you, most of you, exception or two maybe, never saw Prabhupada. And that our whole movement is dedicated to Prabhupada. Now, how can you do that? You never met him. But you've met those who have met him. And you see in the lives of those who are following his teachings what happens. You hear his teaching, and you see, because of media, we can see Prabhupada. Something that Ramabhadra was appreciating. Very, very nice appreciation. Imagine if we could have videos of Vyasadev speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Shukadev Goswami, or Lord Chaitanya having kirtan at Rath Yatra in Puri. Imagine if they had technology that could capture Narottam Das Thakur singing one of his beautiful songs in separation from Rupa Goswami.
Shri Rupa. The whole world would be Krishna conscious.
The whole world would be Krishna conscious. I mean, imagine. So they didn't have Madhvacharya going to receive instructions from Vyasadeva about how to compile his Bhagavad Gita commentary. We don't have it on video.
Darn.
But we do in that disciplic succession. In this present time frame, we have such a pure devotee captured electronically, in MP3 format, and hear his lectures and see him speaking and see him dancing and walking and instructing and training and smiling and laughing and chastising and, doing everything. Growing this movement from nothing, from a barren field to a beautiful orchard and, what do you call it? Botanical garden. Right? We saw the St. Louis book and passed by them. From nothing. So that we can become attached to him by hearing about him and hearing the descriptions of him and reading his teachings and seeing how they are, when applied, they awaken bhakti. There's little, the importance of Prabhupada's books is inestimable. Just this 2 weekends ago, there was a devotee from Upper Peninsula, Michigan. Panchatattva knows where Upper Peninsula, Michigan is. It's nowhere. You know, there's Michigan, and then there's Upper Peninsula, Michigan, on the other side of Lake Superior or whatever it is. You know, it's like tundra loca up there. And somehow he got a book. One devotee there got a book. And, you know, the same, he read the book and he really liked the book. And he still, those interested in the contacts, wrote to the secretary, corresponding secretary, got a bunch more books, started reading those bunch more books. And the books that spoke about chanting the holy name. So he, you know, and spoke of beads. So he started chanting the holy name, found out how to get some beads and started chanting them. No association of devotees other than Prabhupada's books. And then he thought, gee, there must be some places where the people practice this. People like me. So, because he's from Upper Peninsula, Michigan, the closest city was Minneapolis, and for his business he had to go to Minneapolis. So he looked up, and by the grace of God, they had a little Gopal's drop-in center and near Dinkytown, just at the university area of University of Minnesota. He met devotees. But, you know, by this time he was already chanting and offering his food and following Prabhupada's teachings. He's now initiated devotee, just, you know, from Prabhupada's books. And a little of Prabhupada's instructions are so powerful. This isn't at all what I wanted to speak about. But it's a wonderful topic. What I wanted to speak about is how Prabhupada has given us the personality of Godhead. When, like we were hearing, like this discussion about Satrajit's worshipping of Surya Dev. It wasn't here actually, it was some other place. Satrajit was a worshipper of, you know, but it's in here. Those who are worshippers of the sun with a lamp. They want something. And, you know, Satrajit, he got something. He got a big-time something. But that big-time something he got was a big-time problem. It caused his death and his brother's death. Because he wasn't pure. And he got something very, very valuable. And he became proud. So, but what Prabhupada is teaching us from the get-go is not to have some demand. Devotional service isn't for that purpose. This, while at lunch I was listening to Prabhupada speaking about when he was a boy, he was able to remember his experience from 1.5 years old. There was a disease that was going around. Some kind of, what do you call that when a disease?
Epidemic,
thank you. There was an epidemic of some kind of disease going all over Calcutta. Nobody knew what to do. They didn't have any medicine that did anything. So there was one mystic yogi, and he decided we'll have big kirtan. So he went all over the city of Calcutta with kirtan. You know, in the shops, in everybody's homes, all over Calcutta. And it was a big stir. And Prabhupada said, I remember because I was only 1.5 years old. I didn't know what the cause of it was. I didn't know. Later I found it was because of an epidemic. But I remember seeing people, you know, just up to their legs, their shins, because he was just 1.5 years old. And dancing and dancing. And he said, I was even dancing. I didn't know what it was. I was dancing. 1.5 years old. And the epidemic stopped. And everybody understood, oh, it's because of the chanting of the holy name. And Prabhupada said it 8 times. Chanting shouldn't be done for some reason like this, for some material purpose. It's, we should not do that. It's namaparad to do that. It's an offense to the holy name to bring the holy name into our material service.
He repeated it 8 times. We shouldn't do it. But then he said, but he did it. And it worked. So, but it doesn't work to bring one love of God. It's one of the offenses to be avoided. So we should avoid that type of thing. We don't approach the Lord making some demand as the message. We just glorify the Lord. And if one can enter into that instruction, actually enter into that instruction, enter into the realm of devotional service and become attracted by the attractiveness of Krishna, one can come to pure devotional service. And Prabhupada is giving us pure devotional service in the first canto. What to speak of canto 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Even in canto 1, it's pure devotional service. Like, you know, on your mark, it's set, pure devotional service. When I haven't spoken about this, so I'm going to take a little opportunity. Just before coming here to St. Louis, I was in Motown, in Detroit. And he knows. One of the things that we did Friday evening was at the Fisher Mansion. There was a peace talk. There was a gentleman. He turns out he's a Gandhian Buddhist. Interesting combination. And he has international following. He has something like 100 and... I forget the numbers now. Some large number. Some thousands of villages in Lanka that are following Gandhian Buddhism by his thing. And, you know, he came to America because he has, like the person that introduced him was the CEO of his not-for-profit organization, the chairman of the board of his not-for-profit organization from Madison, Wisconsin, and introduced him. And he's taking him around America to get some American dollars to go to support his Gandhian Buddhist program. Because he's, you know, the motto is, the Gandhian part is service to the people. And the Buddhist part is, there's no soul and there's no God, but there's prayer. For serving the oneness of us all.
A little contradicting.
And he's got thousands of people doing it. Excuse me, thousands of villages, so it's tens of thousands of people doing it. You know, an orphanage with his wife is now, the mother of 8 children is now in charge of, I forget the number, so you know, he was very happy to say the number. It's like 120,000 kids that are orphans or something like that. You know, in Lanka from the tsunami and
warfare.
Yeah. So for people that, so we'll go up, we're going to go up to the personality of Godhead, but down here is people that are, you know, just selfish. And there are persons that understand you should be a little above selfishness. And a little above self, little above just being selfish is to do service to others, so that resonates. You know, in indigenous enterprises where, you know, that teach the village people how to take care of each other and spread the wealth and help each other and, you know, just go as far as you can go. As far as the willingness of people to go takes you. to, you know, build homes and dig wells and make cloth and take care of their food. There's some poor people. Help. It's like, you know, it has a nice Christian dimension too. It's like, he's got a very interesting blend of appeal. But there's no God in the picture. There's no soul in the picture. It's just service to the oneness of us all. With Buddhist overtones of nonviolence. It was a little tough because, you know, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyate Shatadine, Prabhupada came to deliver the Western countries from impersonalism and voidism, and here we are at Fisher Mansion hosting this man talking voidism. I was in the name of One Piece, that was his event. So I guess one of the advantages of Fisher Mansion being the host of that is some other people that never otherwise would have come to the temple came to the temple to, you know, experience whatever this talk was. And I also spoke, so gave Prabhupada's teachings very clearly. So there's the people that know nothing about spirituality, this may seem intriguing. Buddhism is a very popular and growing phenomena in America because there's no commitment to God. There's no surrender. Hey, spirituality without surrender. I don't have a commitment to anybody. I can just be spiritual. And what does that mean? Well, ask me. I'll tell you what it means. And ask the next guy. He'll tell you what it means for him. And ask the next guy whatever it means for him. And, you know, we have our own definition of what is spiritual. And I'm not accountable to anybody. I mean, so one devotee asked a very pointed question about meat eating. And he didn't give it. It was Adiraj gave the, you know, very pointed question. And this doctor didn't give a very short answer. He said, vegetarianism is definitely the best. And didn't say anything more than that. So in the world of spiritual seeking people today, and it's not just, you know, the unguided or misguided American population, it's the world is becoming more and more universal. Some idea of, you know, in the final analysis, Swamiji, it's all one, isn't it? And so common is that idea. I hear it all the time from people from India, and ultimately everything is all one. It's like, without even thinking what that phrase means, that's just like the buzz. At best, that's the impersonal Brahman, but generally it's just mush. It's not even a clear idea of, you know, beyond matter is this impersonal Brahman. It's just, it's all one. So beyond the Brahman conception is the Paramatma conception. And how elevated is the Paramatma conception? How difficult was it for Dhruva to realize Paramatma, to see the form of the Lord? And here Prabhupada is taking us to the platform of seeing Bhagavan feature face to face and telling us repeatedly, that's the goal. See the Lord face to face. See Him smile. Catch His favorable glance. See His transcendental form. Relate with Him as a person. Canto one. And you know, we're hardly out of the gate, and we're that's the level that we are. With no compromise about mushy, wishy-washy, unclear, We're so fortunate. We're being like Rabindra Sarup Prabhu wrote an article for Bhakti Godhead once, something about how I was saved from being saved. By having such a clear explanation. Rupa? You read the article?
I think Munch and Tupper talked about it once.
You did? Here? You don't remember?
This was the disease one that you spoke about. You wrote an article on disease, that transcending disease. That's when you spoke about it.
Anyway, back to the idea of Prabhupada is not encouraging us to strive for liberation or so becoming one. He's not meditate on the universality of us all, whatever that means. Nor, although the platitude of the high sounding nature of that for persons that don't have spiritual training, it sounds, oh, that's very nice. It captures the sentiment of philanthropism. He even used the word philanthropism. The sentiment of selfless work for others and bringing others to this position of spirituality where we're in harmony with the oneness of us all.
Did he elaborate on the meaning of that?
No, he didn't want to. He didn't want to. The closest he got was to say that something that's common to us all is we all serve. You know, which is something that the Bhagavatam teaches us and Prabhupada teaches us. So what we should do is just serve. Just serve. That's the oneness of us all. Just serve. Okay. Here's the rug and I'll pull it out from under you, and that's a service. It's platitude. It's anyway. It's, you know, we're very fortunate that very clearly and explicitly, as Prabhupada is saying here, what all beings want, what's both things. We want the innate happiness of the soul to be experienced. We want the miseries to be removed. According to the teaching of Rupa Goswami and Nectar of Devotion, these two things, the removal of inauspiciousness and the awakening of auspiciousness, or the removal of the sufferings, kleshagni and shubhada, they happen just from sadhana bhakti, just from what we're doing right now, just our chanting, our offering of our food to Krishna, hearing about Krishna, having sankirtan, hearing the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam. The very process does these two things. And as we, that is, the removal of the unwanted miseries of sufferings of life, kleshas, they're eradicated, and the natural auspiciousness of the heart is awakened. The soul is awakened to our natural attraction to Krishna by just the simple things that we're doing. It's not like Prabhupada left some esoteric, you know, little message that later on when you grow up and become a big devotee, then you can be told something, some esoteric teaching. It's being given right away. And those who are very new, like, you know, the persons who are janata agha, the sinful persons of the victims of Kali Yuga, this Bhagavatam and this process of Bhagavad Dharma is for them, And it's the same process for those who are on the perfected platform. The same verses of the Bhagavatam are relished. We were discussing this morning that elevated souls, they derive great happiness just churning the topics of Krishna and relishing the topics of Krishna together. Bhagavatam is actually meant for that purpose. Discussing amongst the association of devotees, it's like a lozenge or a rasgulla. The juiciness is released when you chew it. Just leave it in the bowl or the jar and the juiciness stays inside. But when you chew it, the juiciness comes out. And so the topics of the Bhagavatam are meant like that. There's a very, very beautiful description of Srinivasacharya. His life is very, very wonderful, but one of the events in his life is at the disappearance of one who was his spiritual father when he was just growing up as a small boy. Narahari Thakur had left the world after Lord Chaitanya's departure and so forth. So there was a big festival in honor of Narahari Thakur. Many wonderful things, but the thing that just... He gave a Bhagavatam class. It was on an Ekadasi morning, and there was assembly of many great devotees. The direct son of Lord Nityananda and the sons of Advaita Acharya and Janava, the wife of Lord Nityananda, and many, many, many elevated devotees. But Srinivasacharya was directly trained. He was directly empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even before he was born, that he would become, we discussed it this morning, he would become the manifestation of Lord Chaitanya's full mercy. And Lord Chaitanya gave him a name before even he was conceived, named him Srinivas. So he was famous before he was even born. And then when he was born, he was famous. And then when he grew up, he was famous. And Lord Chaitanya had instructed Gadadhar Pandit, "I'm going to leave this world, but I want you to remain after I've disappeared. You'll be feeling great separation from me, but I want you to remain and train Srinivas in Srimad Bhagavatam." So when Lord Chaitanya left, Gadadhar Pandit didn't want to remain, but he had this instruction from his life and soul, Lord Chaitanya, to remain and train Srinivas in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a whole long... So he was the recipient of such mercy when he gave a Bhagavatam class that started in the morning, and everybody was in such ecstasy. The Bhagavatam class went on for the whole day until Gaura Arti. And it was Ekadasi, so everyone was fasting anyway. So then they had wonderful Gaura Arti. So the Bhagavatam, when discussed in the association of those who are pure or those who are striving to be pure, the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam are just streams of ecstasy. It's meant this attraction. Krishna means to attract, the all-attractive. It attracts one from the material situation into the spiritual, into the kingdom of God, accompanied with the chanting of the holy name. This is our... And then prasad. That's our process. Chanting, dancing, feasting, and a little philosophy. Kevalananda Kanda. Simply joyful. We're very fortunate. And as much as we can recognize that good fortune, then when feelings of gratitude are there in recognition of that good fortune, that jewel, valuable jewel that we've been given, that stirs our spiritual emotions. It stirs the deeper sense of transcendental emotion, so that as we take up the process, we're feeling something more than just, you know, completing our prescribed duties. Any discussion from this verse in Bhagavatam and the Detroit One Piece? They made a boo-boo, actually. They had a the initial flyer said it was like a picture of a sun, the rising of the sun, and then beneath that was a little banner that said, "One person, one world, one piece." Then they changed the flyer because they didn't mean the one person. It just sounded good, but it really didn't. But I captured it and showed it on the screen. And who is that one person? And gave Prabhupada's Peace for Me, the 529 Bhagavad Gita. Yeah.
Or sometimes the impersonalism comes kind of disguised. For example, someone will say, "Oh, what I am doing," and maybe all nonsense, "but it is all the lila of the God. It is all God's lila. It is Him having His play through me. This I am doing, and therefore everything I'm doing is perfectly fine, because it's actually the Lord's pastime."
And to that, Prabhupada would say, "And here is my shoe, and I beat on your head, and that's the Lord's lila." When there's no scriptural authority, then, you know, it's romper room. That doesn't mean anything to them. It's like children.
It means something to me.
It's just child's play. You know, it's preschool.
It's a play.
Huh? There's probably a more modern version for, you know, whatever the kids' television shows, Barney or whatever, something that's children's. Ignash knows it all, right? Well, there's no, so Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panchara Kriki Vidin Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatayai Vakalpate, according to Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Utpat, big disturbance, where there's no reference to Shruti, Smriti, Puranas and Pancharatras. Just, you know, this is spiritual and that's spiritual. Just a disturbance.
Appreciating Vaishnava Prabhupada in the first canto itself, he's giving pure devotional service, what to speak of later cantos. And then the Bhagavad Gita also, we see even in chapters and verses where Krishna's going to Krishna, or the verses describing that Srila Prabhupada goes directly to pure devotional service.
Yeah. There's a little story that Satyaraj shared with me. I may have shared it here before, but it's worth hearing it again. Some of you may know Satyaraj. He's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada who has made it his mission or his thing to mix with scholars and try to set straight their understanding what Vaishnavism actually is by scholarly writings. So he goes every year to the American Academy of Religion Conference. It comes in April, and it's in different places in America. but scholars from all over the world, religious, the scholars of religion, come to that. And they present papers and do their scholarly, you know, schmoozing thing. So he's been going every year and every year, every year. So it was about 3 years ago that he had two independent discussions with the two foremost Bhagavad Gita critics. And you know what that means. And for scholarly world, it means you don't say anything good about anybody. You literally criticize everybody. So whenever there was a new edition of Bhagavad Gita, they would critique it. You know, like a book review from New York Times, it's important to the publishing world what the New York Times reviewers say. So for scholars, what these two guys would say was important. And they would always criticize Prabhupada, that he didn't give the right translation of things, blah, 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 blah. So about 3 years ago, separately, they independently said the same thing to him. Actually, your Swamiji's translation is the best translation. Because although he does not give the literal meaning, he gives the essence from every verse. And the essence is bhakti, and he gives the essence from every verse. Therefore, it is the best. And those kind of critics don't give compliments. Their profession is to do the other. Satyaraj was really wowed by that. Not only devotees appreciated, but even these two critics, at least, appreciated like that. But I was speaking at a Srimad Bhagavatam class in Mayapur 2 years ago. Long, long ago, I was visiting at the University of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont, which is as far as north you can go in Vermont. University of Vermont. And it was in the winter, and it was freezing cold. But I don't know why I went there. I think I was invited to go there by somebody that was attending school or something like that. So I was invited to give a class at a world religion class. And so I was like, you know, the monarch butterfly. I was the specimen of here's a practitioner of bhakti. So the professor introduced me. He's the Hare Krishna member, you remember from our studies what Vaishnavism is. Here's the monarch butterfly. We're going to put him under the magnifying glass and check out his antlers and his spots. And so I began speaking. And when I began speaking, I was describing that bhakti is speaking about Bhagavan. There's Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is the complete feature of the Absolute Truth. And that wasn't where I began, but when I got to that point, 10 minutes into the discussion, the professor practically had a heart attack and was hemorrhaging right on the floor, saying, "It's not like that, it's not like that. That's the Bhakti school. I'll tell you how it really is when he's gone tomorrow." And he freaked out right on the spot. I said, "Wow, I really pushed this guy's button."
Yeah.
He was like, you know, very uptight about the respect that the students would have for him as, you know, the authority, and I was saying something other than his authority. Uh-huh. That was the button.
Yeah.
The pride button. But, you know, these poor students, you know, they're getting impersonal, you know, it's all one. That's what they were getting through their whole course on world religion. Bhagavad Gita is, it's all one. There's no Krishna. Krishna disappears. Paramatma disappears. It's all one. Because you can't have Bhagavan, because Bhagavan means two. There's you and there's Bhagavan. You can't have two. You got to have one. So Bhagavan disappears. Although it's Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. He said, "Professor, how can you say that? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha." He said, "We'll talk about it later." So, we're fortunate. We're very fortunate that the message of pure devotional service beginning and the middle and the end. And we, so as Prabhupada writes, it's just, we can decide whether to take it up or not, but there it is on a silver platter. And in this, again, the emphasis that the medium that we're being provided is very easy. You know, come to somebody's home, this is what we're doing. Have a little kirtan to read Srimad Bhagavatam a bit, speak about it, have another kirtan and take prasadam and go home. Get up tomorrow morning and chant your rounds and go to work and offer your food to Krishna. And not difficult. But because Krishna is a person and he's all attractive and is being not covered and concealed. It's the sun without a cloud. And we're the particle being enlivened by the presence of the sun. It's very nice. Process. Something? Yes, Rupa?
Maharaj, I remember when I had the first good fortune to meet you, this topic came up about this Buddhism and oneness, and besides the, your answer was at that time the same, of course, but you said two things. One was there's no standard, which is that you said tonight, there's no accountability. But you also said there's no shelter. And that's what made it for me very, very clear. You know, that's what Prabhupada came to give us. That, I mean, you can talk all this other stuff, but if there's really no shelter, no refuge from the ignorance that you're in, the philanthropy, and the sentimentalism and all that other stuff isn't going to do anybody any good.
So take shelter of Krishna. You're, however much each one of the persons assembled here this evening have realized it, the lotus feet of Krishna have been like he lifted his dhoti and he's showing you his lotus feet. He's giving you access to his lotus feet. He's inviting you. And Prabhupada is right there by his lotus feet, beckoning, pointing. And then Krishna's smile, and Krishna's smiling. The invitation is there. And as Prabhupada writes so beautifully, now it's a question of whether we take it up or not. Shelter is there. One question, then we'll chant. Go ahead.
I'm trying to choose the right too much.
Oh. Do it cleverly, you can ask two at once. I'll allow you two, how's that?
Thank you.
Okay.
Maharaj, you were speaking about by hearing, one of the things that happens is I wish to serve gets awakened.
Yes.
And my experience has been that as I'm hearing, my wish to serve in a qualitative way is increasing. At the same time, I'm realizing my capacity to do many services in a qualitative way is really not there. So, you know, my quantity of service is reducing over time.
That, maybe yes, maybe no. But, you know, the reaching quality is by Krishna's empowerment. That's also mentioned, that the attraction of Krishna is brings one to the platform of pure devotional service. So just worry about being attracted to Krishna and everything will be all right. Is that it? Okay.
Sure, can I ask the other question?
You can go ahead and ask the other question and then you can go ahead and sing.
Right, you were speaking of how our process is Kevalam and Kanda and it's simple and you know, but as we're doing services, I'm finding so many impurities are coming out and
that's joyful. if those impurities are staying within, that's painful. But they're coming out as joyful. It's part of the mercy of Krishna that happens. Would you rather they stay? That would be more joyful. Okay, so it's joyful.